Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian. My co-host is Brian Johnson. Hello, Brian.
How's it going, Charge?
You're going to get a rare week off next week. Scott Fish expected to be in next week.
Oh, I'm not invited?
No, you are invited. You can come.
Maybe I'll come by.
Or you can have a day off.
It's your choice.
I like Scott, too.
Scott's a little busy this time of year.
He's very busy this time of year, and we're excited to have him as part of the show. We're going to break down the AFC West today with everything we believe is going to happen in season this year. We're not recapping what happened off season. We're not recapping what happened last year. This is a forward-facing projections for this coming year for the teams in the AFC West. Before we jump into the most exciting team in football, the Kansas City Chiefs, Brian, let's mention GuillotineLeagues.com.
What?
Available now, whether you want a private league with friends, anywhere between 8 and 18 teams you and your friends want to play, or if you don't have friends, you want to join in an existing contest, we've got contests. You can just go join right now at every price point that you want to play at, whatever your pricing level is. And of course, Guillotine Leagues are a unique format where 18 teams start the season. And every week, the low-scoring team for that week gets cut, and all their players go to the waiver wire, and then pandemonium happens.
Even their first-round pick?
The whole roster, wow. Right to the waiver wire,
you're not
going to
find a waiver wire like that anywhere else fantasy football.
It is bonkers. And so much strategy and so much fun when Dalvin Cook and Keenan Allen and all these great players, a whole draft's worth of players hit the waiver wire. So much fun. GuillotineLeagues.com. We encourage you to check it out. Also available, my cheat sheet is now available there, both for Guillotine League purposes and regular non-Guillotine League purposes. My cheat sheet there for both. All right, Brian, let's jump into the Kansas City Chiefs, probably the offense that is most familiar to listeners already because everybody wants to have a piece of the Chiefs on their team.
There aren't really many pieces of the Chiefs to have, though, for such a
high. Isn't that funny?
You think of, like, the Rams and the Kurt Warner days. There was Kurt and then Isaac Bruce, Torrey Holt, Azahir Akeem.
Yeah.
Marshall Faulk, of course. There was players that you wanted a piece of. Really, for the the Chiefs, there's four. Maybe even three and a half.
Yeah, 3.5 guys, yeah.
But, Kansas City.
It's a consolidation of power, though, that fantasy owners love.
Oh, totally. Kansas City coming off arguably one of the worst Super Bowl performances of all time last year. No changes at head coach Andy Reid or OC Eric Bieniemy, of course. First in yards per game last year, 414 per game, 21 more yards than the next team. That's the significant delta, which was Green Bay, by the way. Sixth in points per game. They passed the ball the fifth most among all NFL teams, nearly 63% of the time. That means they did not run a lot. 28th in run play percentage was Kansas City. But let's just basically, we got to get to the big three. And it starts with Travis Kelce, who ADP of six right now.
Yeah.
Six.
Deservedly so, by the way.
Deservedly so.
He's been the number one fantasy-producing tight end in three straight years.
Yeah, clearly tight end one off the board. Last year, he finished as a top three wide receiver.
Yeah.
So there's not much, nothing new I can really tell you about Travis Kelce other than he's awesome. We'll get to the riskiest player.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it's got to be one of the big three, basically. And we'll see if it's Travis Kelce or not, but Kelce, you're paying a premium right now. This is like buying Dogecoin at 69 cents, mm-hmm. right? You're paying for the upside. We saw he's got to live up to it. So I'm not saying it's a good pick or a bad pick. I'm on the fence there, but, ADP six tight end one, Travis Kelce. It's insane. Tyreek Hill since June 1st. And, you know, the more Aaron Rodgers rumblings we're getting out of Green Bay, mm-hmm. has usurped Devontae Adams and Stephon Diggs as wide receiver one, ADP of nine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are the two guys that Patrick Mahomes is throwing to. And again,
I have Tyreek Hill as my number one wide receiver.
And a lot of people do now. Maybe he has the most risk among the Chiefs, but we'll find out soon.
I should mention, at the end of each one of these, we identify the player with the most risk versus ADP and the player with the most upside versus ADP. So that's coming at the end of each team.
And as for the other wide receivers, do you really want any piece of it? Sammy Watkins gone, of course. Yeah. Not like he was ever really there, except week one. He's a week one superstar. DeMarcus Robinson is dust. It's really Mecole Hardman and Byron Pringle, and they're both almost free. Pringle's certainly free. Mecole Hardman going off the board at pick 163. That's well past the 12th, 13th round.
Yeah. I'm interested in both of those guys at what it costs to acquire them. Pringle is a young guy with upside who could win the Sammy Watkins role outright if they want to keep Mecole Hardman doing what he has been doing as the sort of gadget guy that he is.
Yeah, we'll touch on one of these two guys.
Okay, all right, okay.
Towards the end of the Chiefs review.
But
No. I mean, clearly there's got to be some upside outside of the big three.
It can't be the big three.
And last, and certainly not least, when it comes to the passing game, Patrick Mahomes, QB1 off the board, to no surprise. Overall ADP of 30, so he's going mid-third round right now. There's nothing I can tell you that you don't already know about Patrick Mahomes. We might see him run a little less this year just to keep him healthier. He certainly has the ability to run. A better runner than I expected him to be coming into the league. Very mobile. He likes to hit the circle button. I like his spin maneuvers. But the only question with Mahomes is, are you going to take a quarterback that early in a ridiculously loaded quarterback class? And again, depends how far he falls. But I don't know if I'm reaching for Mahomes this year if I can get a top-tier quarterback around or two later, or even four or five, six rounds later. But those are clearly the big three. The offense is going to funnel through all of them. If something were to happen to any of them, it drastically changes the landscape of the whole team. But the last guy we got to talk about, the half a player, hopefully he's more of a whole player this year, is Clyde Edwards-Helaire, CEH. Right now, going off the board at RB16, it feels just about right to me. It's kind of like the last... he's the last of the third tier of running backs outside the elite guys, right? Right after him, you get into like Josh Jacobs, Miles Sanders territory. CEH, though, arguably one of the biggest, healthiest busts of 2020.
Yeah, I agree.
We saw his ADP soar into five picks.
I took him in a league at like pick 7 overall last year.
Once Damian Williams opted out and he was the lead back, he certainly did not live up to that ADP. He came out of the gates hot, though. He had a very exciting week one game, remember, but just never got it going. He was a little dinged up, but... at RB16, I'm buying at that price. He's not a dead cat. Runs behind a great O-line. Ranked 7th by Pro Football Focus going into this season.
Yeah, and let's touch on that for just a second.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people are going to remember the terrible Chiefs offensive line from the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But they did a great job of restocking this offensive line and making sure that Patrick Mahomes isn't going to suffer that indignity again. And Orlando Brown there now. They get their doctor... Laurent Duvernay-Tardif back. And so he comes back. Joe Thuney's there. Mike Remmers should not see the field, which is a critical distinction here. Kyle Long. I mean, this is a far, far better offensive line than the one we saw in the Super Bowl.
Definitely. And we'd like to see Kansas City throw to their running backs more. Chiefs backs totaled only 76 catches last year. That was well in the bottom half of the league. And I will throw this out lastly. I do like Jerick McKinnon as a deep sleeper.
In
the draft.
He's not good.
He's good when he's healthy.
No, he isn't.
He's better than Daryl Williams, who's going.
No, I don't even know if that's true.
I disagree there. I don't mind Jerick McKinnon with the last pick in your draft, especially if you got CEH on board. He could return some.
Vikings kicked him to the curb. Niners kicked him to the curb. He's, you know, through injury and whatever else, he's just never lived up to the collegiate hype for Jerick McKinnon.
We will see about Jet.
Okay.
Okay, the riskiest player I got, of course, it's got to be from one of the big three, and I'm going with Tyreek Hill, now going off the board as wide receiver 1. Yes, he was 2nd in receiving touchdowns last year with 15, but 7th.
Pretty good.
It's pretty good. 7th in yards, though. And outside the top 10 in receptions. In fact, Hill only had 3 100-yard games in the regular season last year.
Yeah.
For reference, Calvin Ridley had 8. Justin Jefferson, Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams, 7. Travis Kelce had 6.
Yeah.
And going down the line, Cole Beasley had 5. Corey Davis had 5 100-yard games. I mean, some of these names, they are not very Tyreek Hillian. So, yes, he can still live up to the wide receiver 1 ADP.
Yeah, he can.
But I would be a little more tempted to go running back, or if Travis Kelce happened to still be on board, I could live with getting a Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs in the second round, and because it's either a Kelce or a Tyreek Hill game. Yes, they both kind of go off.
So let's say you're sitting at like pick 5 or 6 in the first round. Hill is there, Kelsey's there.
Oh, it's Kelce. I mean, you take the tight end differentiator.
I think so.
I mean, Kelce finished as a better wide receiver statistically than Tyreek Hill last year. So that's my riskiest player. I'm certainly not saying don't draft Tyreek Hill.
Who's the player with the upside?
The upside, I'm going with, it's one of the non-Tyreek Hill wide receivers, and I'm going with Byron Pringle, who right now is getting drafted. Pick 235. Mecole Hardman's going off the board at 163. So Pringle, essentially free. I'm just out on Hardman. I've given him chances.
Everybody's been burned on Hardman
the last 2 years.
Twice.
So yeah, maybe this is the year he finally pops off. But I'm just going to take the free player in Pringle, who only played in week 5, 6, 8, 11, and 17 last week. Only 5 games. Was not much of a factor in the playoffs either. But when he was given playing time, he showed he could play. And a guy, if he gets 80-100 targets, if you extrapolate the production, his limited production, he's a 600, 700-yard guy, 6-7 touchdowns as a floor. And if something were to happen to Tyreek Hill, of course, Hardman's stock goes up too, but so would Pringle's. I'm just going to take the cheapest guy.
I'm kind of with you on that. And I was the guy putting bets on Pringle in the playoffs, including there was a bet who would be the first Chief to catch a pass in the Super Bowl. And Pringle was like 30-1. And we nailed it.
Nice.
He was the first Chief. That was his only catch of the game. By the way, was the first catch of the game. All right, let's move over to the Los Angeles Chargers. I feel like this Chargers offense is ready to explode and could easily see a massive uptick from last year's 18th ranking in points and 10th ranking in yards per game. The front office has wisely positioned the entire organization to maximize Justin Herbert, and I love it.
The Air Bear.
New head coach Brandon Staley is a defensive guy, and new offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi will guide the offense. In addition to being Vince Lombardi's grandson, he was the Saints quarterback coach for the last 5 years. Brian, what's not to like about being having the Saints quarterback coach come in and work with Justin Herbert? You've just been working with Drew Brees, who was effectively coaching Joe Lombardi on what it's like to be a great quarterback and how to prepare like a great quarterback. I think Lombardi is well positioned to help make sure that Justin Herbert, Air Bear, does everything possible to be great.
I love it. Yeah.
Furthering Justin Herbert's cause was an offensive line that has been retooled and upgraded in so many ways. 4/5 of the line is new, and all 4 are upgrades from the players who were there last year. The Chargers spent a first-round pick on athletic left tackle Rashawn Slater. At right tackle, Brian Bulaga returns after missing much of last year from injury. Massive upgrade at center, where they signed Corey Linsley from the Packers in free agency. According to Pro Football Focus, he gave up 7 pressures all of last year.
That's it.
And both guards are new in free agency. Matt Feiler, formerly of the Texans, is mostly just a guy, but he's not a liability. And Ode Abushi, formerly of the Jets, is coming off his best NFL season. He only allowed 1 sack last year. And those are your 2 new guards. This is a massively upgraded offensive line. Again, Chargers spent this offseason making sure Justin Herbert is in position to succeed. And I'm very excited for him after a record-setting rookie season. I thought he demonstrated remarkable poise, arm strength, good accuracy, not elite accuracy, but I think that'll come yet. And I'm not carving a bust in Canton for him yet, but his rookie season suggests that kind of trajectory for him.
Well, yeah. What was it, like week 3 when Tyrod Taylor got
2
impaled by the team doctor? And yeah, I remember everyone saw Herbert warming up, and we're like, this kid's going to get thrown to the wolves.
he was against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And they almost won. Yeah,
but he did not get thrown to the Wolves.
And he had no prep as the starter because the injury went down 10 minutes before kickoff. So, you know, you find out 10 minutes before kickoff, you need to go face Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. And I'm almost certain they went to overtime in that game.
Yeah, it was a great game.
There is no reason to believe that Herbert will regress this year, and especially with all these other things that are happening. He's going off the board as quarterback 6. I think that is an appropriate ranking for him. Let's talk about his wideouts. We're going to spend more time on Keenan Allen in a few minutes. Let's go over to Mike Williams. Unlike Keenan Allen, who blossomed under Justin Herbert, Williams remained on the same trajectory he had always been on, which is bad game, bad game, bad game, good game. Bad game, bad game, good game, bad game, bad game, bad game, bad game, good game.
He's been dinged, though, hasn't he?
Not really.
He makes some incredible...
He played every game last year.
He makes some amazing catches, though. I mean, the guy can play. I don't.
Once a month, he's great. Once a month. He's in his meager 4 games with a touchdown last year. In those 4 games, he averaged 1.25 touchdowns and 98 yards. Very good games.
Yeah.
You want to talk about his other games?
No.
How about the other 12 games without a touchdown when he averaged 37 yards and no touchdown? He smoked your team in 12 games last year.
Yeah.
That's Mike Williams. I think the way to go here, the last pick of your draft, emerging young wide receiver Tyron Johnson, now in his third year. He saw his usage spike in December last year when he averaged 4 catches, 44 yards, and half a touchdown per game in December. That's almost exactly what Mike Williams put up in December. Johnson could beat out Williams outright and force Williams into more of a passing down only role. I think Johnson's a fascinating last pick of the draft. Jalen Guyton is the other receiver. He runs from the slot. That puts him behind Keenan Allen, so he's dead to us until Allen gets hurt, which sometimes he does.
Please don't, though, Keenan.
Your starting tight end is Jared Cook, taking over for Hunter Henry. You know the drill on Cook by this point. He's a veteran journeyman on his 6th NFL team. That tells you plenty. I think Cook is startable only in tight end positive matchups. You pick him up off the waiver wire, and you give him a go when you see a positive matchup. Otherwise, you don't mess with him.
In deeper... mostly dynasty leagues, especially tight end premium leagues. Keep your eye on Donald Parham fame.
People do like him play. As a sleeper. Yep. Yeah. Long-term sleeper. Let's go to the running back position. Austin Eckler is going to be one of the most divisive fantasy players this year.
Not on this show.
I love his all-purpose skill set.
I'm with you.
I think he's got elite PPR upside. You know, last year, we spent much of the summer pounding the table for Austin Eckler, and then he suffered that devastating hamstring injury where he lost 8 games. But let's talk about what we did learn from him. He averaged a whopping 6 receptions per game last year. It's hard for a runner to flop when he's giving you 6 PPR points just on his receptions every game. And if he's averaging even like 6 yards per reception, okay, great. There's 10 points right there just on his receptions. In Eckler's 9 healthy games last year, he scored or topped 87 total yards in 7 of the 9 games. So it wasn't like hyper splashy games, but he was very consistent producer in his 9 healthy games last season.
The only running backs I'm taking over Eckler as of right now, in no particular order, McCaffrey, Cook, Henry. That's it for me.
Well, you know, I thought I liked him.
I'm taking him over Barkley, Kamara,
okay.
Zeke, Jonathan Taylor.
I got him at 9. So you've got him at like 5, it sounds like. So holy cow.
Yeah, I'm very bullish on Eckler.
Right. But let's mention this. Austin Eckler's never rushed for more than 3 touchdowns in a season, which is shocking. And some people reasonably want to see more carries than he gives you from a second round, late first round, early second round running back. You know, that's a legit worry. Eckler's backup in training camp is going to be something to watch. It'll be either Josh Kelly or Justin Jackson, and we don't know for sure yet. That's going to be something to get sorted out in the preseason. Either way, I'm not particularly interested.
Yeah, those rushing touchdown numbers aren't great, of course. He hasn't really been given the chance to accumulate tons.
No, they don't. He doesn't get a lot of carries.
He's not like he's a concern at the goal line either, because the dude is a He's a beast.
Yeah, he's built.
So I'm not, yeah. Built.
So let's go back to new offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi. He just got done seeing how Alvin Kamara was used. I don't see, you know, I think Eckler will be his Alvin Kamara.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
He stays healthy. He's in line for a monster year. And of course, Herbert's got to stay healthy and down the line with the offensive line.
Yeah.
Pun intended. But
you may have forgotten this, by the way. Week one of last year, Josh Kelly went berserk. And then he did nothing the rest of the year. So just, you know, he's the second year back, and he might be in line to be the backup. But either way, I think you'd probably just avoid both of those guys. All right, let's talk about the riskiest Chargers player at his current ADP, and that's Mike Williams. Even though his ADP is not very high, it's wide receiver 53 in round 12. But I think he's in danger to lose his job, as I mentioned earlier. And he's proven year over year to be one of the least predictable fantasy producers in the entire league. The player with the most upside compared to his ADP, Keenan Allen. I told you we'd talk about him later. Here he is. He's going off the board as wide receiver 9 in the third round. It feels like Keenan Allen's 100 years old, but he's 29. He's still right in the prime of his career. Obviously, he's an elite possession receiver. He surged in the second half of the season as Herbert got better. Keenan Allen was just powering teams. In his last full 7 games last year, he averaged 8 catches, 71 yards, and a touchdown per game. If you put those 7 games where Herbert was, getting this first handful of games out of the way, mm-hmm. So Herbert's starting to click at the quarterback position, Allen's putting up those 8 catches, 71 yards, and a touchdown per game, it translates into an 1,100-yard, 16-touchdown season, which would have made Keenan Allen wide receiver 3 across a full season.
Yeah, he's had his injuries in the past, certainly hasn't had Justin Herbert as his quarterback in the past. The time is now. Yeah,
time is now.
He's been putting up numbers for a
while. He has been putting up good numbers.
But yeah, when he's on and he's healthy and he's got a quarterback like Herbert, yeah, there is no stopping
him. Now, the healthy is a concern, right? And some people are still bitter. Do you remember last year, Keenan Allen tweeted to fantasy owners, like, go ahead and start me?
Oh, it was like week 15.
And then he didn't play.
Yeah, that was bad.
That was not cool.
And he got the kick out of it, too.
I think he probably enjoyed that.
Not
but
cool.
Fantasy owners can be assholes, and they've probably been jerks to him on Twitter and other places, and he probably exacted a little revenge.
But still, NFL players, your salaries...
get paid by us.
You can thank us for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're not nearly as high without the fantasy football community.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to break down the Las Vegas Raiders and Denver Broncos as we go through the AFC West and identify our favorite and least favorite players versus ADP, and what we expect to happen over the course of this coming season. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Brian Johnson with you. Well, you've got the Raiders, Brian, and that means
the whole thing
is going to be about Darren Waller.
Pretty much. The Raiders have 2 players inside the top 140 players drafted. And of course, it's Waller and then Josh Jacobs, ADP of 80, and then Kenyon Drake at 141. So let's just get the running game out of the way for the Raiders, who ran the ball the 10th highest amount last year, 44% of the time, top 10 in rush play percentage. The O-line is pretty much almost entirely
totally rebuilt. And I don't know that that's a good thing.
No, it looks like a downgrade pretty much across the board for the 3 starters they lost from last year. Pro Football Focus has them ranked 25th, their offensive line going into the season. They did draft left tackle Alex Leatherwood out of Alabama with the 17th overall pick, but he was viewed as a reach.
Second or third rounder, yeah.
Reach by most. So and then they bring in Richie Incognito to shore up that left side.
Well, in fairness, Incognito's been good, although injured. When he plays, he's been good.
But the line probably not going to be as good, and it was pretty much mediocre at best last year, so nothing to get excited about there. The Raiders obviously brought in Kenyon Drake to form a pretty much a platoon at running back, it seems like.
That's the worry.
The uninspiring Josh Jacobs. Shockingly, last year, Drake with the Cardinals, of course,
Drake and Jacobs were tied with the most rush attempts inside the 10-yard line with 35, and both recorded 9 touchdowns, somewhat effective. So good luck trying to figure out that John Gruden coin flip on a week-in, week-out basis. I'm basically off of this running game entirely. So either one needs to miss significant time to really clear up an opening for either Jacobs or Drake, and we'll probably talk about Josh Jacobs a little bit.
Oh, okay. All right, then I'm not going to drill down too much on Josh Jacobs right now, but I'll say this. I mean, the fantasy community is down on Jacobs, so much so that I think he's starting to sound like value where he's getting drafted, but we're, you know, he's starting to appear in the 20s in some people's rankings.
Yeah, and he's clinging to the teens right now.
Yep, but but we'll talk more about that in a minute.
Yeah, all right. And we won't talk too much about it either. As for the passing game, like you said, basically one guy in the whole team, and that's Darren Waller. Mm-hmm. Got red hot in week 11, finished on a tear last year, averaging more than 7.5 catches and 109 yards in his final 7 games with 5 touchdowns. Extrapolate that over a full 17-game season now.
Yes.
That is 128 catches, 1,853 yards, and 12 touchdowns for Darren Waller. Even a 17-game extrapolate, or I'm sorry, a 16-game extrapolation. He's bonkers. A top 10 wide receiver, going in the mid-second as tight end two. One of the guys who could usurp Travis Kelce as the top tight end. He certainly has that potential. The passing game is going to run through him. It's certainly not going to run through Henry Ruggs or John Brown or Brian Edwards. The quote-unquote big three for the Raiders wide receivers has changed last year. Nelson Aguilar gone. We won't see a ton of Zay Jones. But Las Vegas did not pass the ball a lot. Mentioned how they ran the 10th most times. The wide receivers finished as a unit 31st in catches, 22nd in yards, and 18th in touchdowns with 14. And, of course, that one Henry Ruggs bomb against the Jets should not count.
Yeah, it should not count.
We'll strike that from the record.
That's a Greg Williams blunder is all that is.
So, yeah, nothing to get too excited about with the wide receivers. I'm certainly not targeting Ruggs. Even at pick 170, it's like wide receiver 50-ish. There's one wide receiver I might draft, and we'll talk about him after we talk about Josh Jacobs again, who's the riskiest Raider based on ADP. There's really only two guys that fall into this category.
I
love Darren Waller too much. I'm not going Darren Waller. RB19 right now for Jacobs, way too expensive for me. Even if no Kenyon Drake, that might be a little too pricey for me. Jacobs, very uninspiring. Watching him play, ran for under 4 yards per carry last year, only averaged more than 4 yards per carry in 6 games.
Yeah, that's bad. Absolutely. And this offensive line's worse. I don't think the line's going to give him more opportunity. It might be less.
And despite being pretty effective in the red zone, Drake was equally as effective, and he's a better pass catcher as well. So I am all out on Josh. Like, he's on my, you know, my kill list. If I can take a guy out of my draft pool, he's gone. He's like one of the first ones. And then for upside, actually, I was going to go Brian Edwards. There's some steam around Edwards, a rookie last year, didn't get a ton of playing time. But it's Derek Carr, QB 26 right now.
That's ridiculous. He finished last year as like QB 12 in fantasy scoring.
He's going after Trey Lance, Ben Roethlisberger, Ryan Fitzpatrick, which I don't hate the Fitzpatrick going before him, but Derek Carr, 8th most passing touchdowns last year with 27, despite finishing outside the top 12 in attempts. He also added 3 rushing touchdowns. The Raiders throw the ball more.
They're going to have to.
Yeah. Like I said, we don't love the running game. Carr, as basically the last pick in your draft as a backup quarterback, he could return top 12, top 15 numbers at the quarterback position. So
I'm going to differ with you on only one guy, materially differ with you.
Okay.
And it's not even materially. Henry Ruggs at wide receiver 50, whatever. Yeah,
there's upside.
There's so much upside. I mean, Darren Waller can't catch every touchdown. If you think Derek Carr is going to find his way to just a middle of the road 25 passing touchdowns, if half of them go to Waller, that still leaves 12 touchdowns to go someplace. Where are they going to go? I mean, Ruggs has got to finish with like 5-6 of those.
One would think, but
I don't know. I mean, there's just nobody else to catch a pass. So I feel like there's a chance there. And then, you know, maybe it's John Brown as a seasoned veteran who maybe this year he stays healthy 16. He might be a good value here.
John Brown's the epitome of a a best ball guy.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, John Brown is in like DeSean Jackson. He's in that ilk. But
the thing on Brown, though, is I think we know what Brown is, and the Bills knew what Brown was, and they cut him. And I just think we know what he is. Ruggs still has freaky upside athletically if he can pull the rest of it together, which obviously he was not close to doing last year. But the NFL's littered with receivers who did nothing in year one and were way better in year two.
I'm still liking Bryan Edwards 50, 60 picks later. Only two or more targets in five games for Edwards.
But he was invisible.
He looks like an alpha, for sure. Looks like an alpha, but only 11 catches in those on the season, but he did average a very impressive 17 and a half yards per catch.
Okay. It's not a sample size that works, though.
No, but he had a lot of long catches.
Let's move on to Denver. Offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur's greatest success throughout his entire career, probably as Minnesota's offensive coordinator, which he parlayed into then getting the Giants head coaching job. And he's now teamed up with Minnesota's assistant general manager, now his general manager in Denver, George Payton. And considering Minnesota's run-heavy orientation, I don't think it was surprising that George Payton spent that second-round pick on running back Javonte Williams, who's going to be featured a lot in what should be a run-heavy attack that minimizes the quarterback position, whether it's Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater. And let's talk about that for a minute, because this might be the NFL's only true open competition in training camp is between these two.
Yeah, probably.
You know, there's like Trey Lance and Justin Fields, but, you know, their coaches are all saying those guys are on the slow boat, right? That there's no plans to start them early. And they might be honest about that. This is like the only openly acknowledged quarterback competition is the one in Denver. So what's interesting, though, is Teddy Bridgewater and Drew Lock are stylistically totally opposite guys. Mm-hmm. Teddy, as you already know, is a check down specialist who tries to minimize mistakes and can't make big plays. He's averaging almost exactly one touchdown pass per game throughout his entire career with now several different teams. This is his fourth team. One touchdown per game is embarrassing at the NFL level. That's Teddy Bridgewater. Then there's Drew Lock. Only Tom Brady averaged deeper passes last year than Drew Lock at 9.1 intended air yards. And he was fifth in aggressiveness, a next-gen stat that notes a willingness to throw into tight coverage. He is your YOLO downfield, don't care if you're covered, don't care of the consequences quarterback.
This post-game comment from Locke from last season will forever live in my brain. When asked just in general about his bad plays, he responded, quote, "Half the time, right as the ball leaves my hands, I'm like, oh no."
I love it. At least he's honest. That's great. So I think we're rooting for Locke to win this job. He did throw a league-worst 15 interceptions, which is highlighted by the quote you just gave us.
A lot of oh no.
But you know what? I'll take it. We need somebody who can press downfield, and that's Drew Lock. Teddy Bridgewater throttles this whole offense, and that's why three teams have given up on Teddy Bridgewater now.
I will give Teddy this. I was shocked to see last year, you know, he was with Carolina, of course, that Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, and Curtis Samuel were all like top 24 wide receivers, which you would not think is possible.
He only threw 15 touchdowns last year, so yes, it is hard to believe. Let's go to the wideouts. Cortland Sutton returns after his lost season with the ACL and MCL.
And if you recall, he got hurt in week one. He was going off.
He was. He had like six catches already
It was like the second quarter.
Yeah, it was a good game. We were awfully optimistic at this time last year. At this time last year, he was going off the board as wide receiver 16. Yeah. Right now, he's wide receiver 32. We'll talk more about him later in the show.
Okay.
After being the 15th player taken in the draft, Jerry Jeudy disappointed us last year. Just three touchdowns in only three games with more than 68 yards. But all signs point up, he'll be better in year two. The return of Cortland Sutton will help take coverage off of him. And between Bridgewater and Locke, there should be some kind of competent quarterbacking. Either Locke gets better, or at least you have Bridgewater for basic competency at the position. So I think Judy's probably pretty safe, and I expect him to be better in year two. Your slot position guy is KJ Hamler. And in the second half of last year, he started getting 20, 30, 40 snaps a game. And so I think he walks into the starting role here, but he's squarely behind Judy and Sutton and Noah Fant in the pecking order for balls, and he feels like just a spot starter.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they – I don't know if Tim Patrick can run out of the slot, but if they try to –
He does not run out of the slot.
Patrick impressed me last year.
Almost only, yeah.
He was a viable option.
He was. With Sutton out, you know, we did see some – we saw some flashes, but he will need Judy or Sutton to go down before we can count on Tim Patrick. So let's talk Noah Fant, who might be the most divisive – player on this team for fantasy owners to figure out. He's a former first rounder who could be sitting on a breakout season. You might recall last year, the first three games of the year, Noah Fant was healthy. He scored twice in the three games, and he posted 46 yards, 57 yards, and 83 yards, Noah Fant. Then he suffered an ankle injury, and he was never the same guy. He missed a game, they played their bye week, and then he played hobbled the rest of the year. And he just, you'd see him limping with one, you're dragging a leg behind him. And he scored one time the rest of the way. History is littered with first round tight ends who explode in year three. Tony Gonzalez, Jeremy Shockey, Greg Olsen, Tyler Eifert all did very little until year three and they blow up. This is year three for Noah Fant. He was on pace through those three healthy games last year to be a monster. This could be the big breakout year for him. The questions are going to be quarterbacking and ball distribution. Mm-hmm. If Sutton and Judy are both very good, and they can be very good players, is there enough ball to go around to feed Noah Fant as well?
We will find out.
Let's go to the running back position. One of the biggest storylines in all fantasy football is going to be the ball distribution and the contest between Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon.
Just give it to Javonte.
That's what we all want. And in fact, I want to talk about that.
Okay.
I mean, fantasy owners always want the rookie to get immediate playing time. But more often than not, it does not work out that way to the desire of fantasy owners. We're all, you know, we want to make the change immediately. Coaches are like, I want the guy in the backfield who can block a blitz and not get my quarterback killed.
Right.
Now, you may recall Pat Shurmur, when he was head coach of the Giants, guided Saquon Barkley to one of the best rookie seasons of any running back ever. Barkley got 20 touches in week one of his rookie season. Then the next week he got 25 touches, and the week after that he got 22 touches. So, you know, Shurmur identified greatness in Saquon Barkley and fed him the ball right away. Maybe he does that with Javonte Williams. Williams is powerful. He's elusive, a tackle breaker, a goal line back with 19 touchdowns last year. And, Brian, the Broncos traded up to get Javonte Williams.
They went and got their guy.
I always feel like that's an intangible indicator of how much a team likes a guy.
Definitely.
I think Williams is going to get enough immediate work to be a flex-worthy runner in September with a chance to rise up to like a 70% workload over Melvin Gordon over the course of the season. Probably won't happen as fast as we want, but Williams is pretty special. Now, Melvin Gordon wasn't bad last year, but he also wasn't good. He averaged 4.5 yards per carry, but only 0.2 yards over expectation per next-gen stats, which puts him behind plodding runners like James Conner and Devontae Booker and Damian Harris and Wayne Gallman. And
one would expect more from their
one would expect more. He scored 9 touchdowns on the ground, Gordon did. And so people, I think, might feel like those 9 touchdowns, you know, helped them last year. I just don't think Gordon's that good. And I don't think teams trade up to get to the top of the second round to take a running back if they don't really like him.
Agreed.
And plan to use him.
Feed Javonte.
So who's the riskiest player at his current ADP? It's Melvin Gordon, who's going off the board as running back 27 in the 5th round. He's going 5 spots ahead of Javonte Williams. Mm-mm. I don't like it.
No, sir.
And then the player with the most upside compared to his current ADP, Cortland Sutton. He is going off the board as wide receiver 32 after going off the board last year at this time as wide receiver 16. So literally a doubling of his ADP. His sophomore year, you forget, he had 1,100 yards as a sophomore with 6 touchdowns and then lost last year. Now, in his 4th season, you figure he gets back to the 1,100 yards and maybe do better, and could easily do better than the 6 touchdowns. Obviously, his reconstructed knee is a concern, but he's been running on that knee since March. And Coach Vic Fangio says he does not expect him to start the season on the PUP list, inferring he's going to be ready by week one. He's going to participate in training camp. So
you'll be a year removed from injury by then. He'll be good to go.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. We encourage you to check out all of my player rankings available at guillotineleagues.com. And how about it playing in a guillotine league while you're there? It's the funnest, freshest way to play fantasy football.
We should maybe have like a listeners league where we can invite some people
to
compete against us.
You want to coordinate that?
Maybe I'll ask Matt to do it. Not yet. I will. Maybe I will. If we get a little interest in it, let's see a little feedback on Twitter about it.
Yeah, all right. So let's use a hashtag. Let's get my hashtag for this. How about hashtag guacamole?
Hashtag
guacamole. If we get 18 people who hashtag guacamole.
Well, other people are going to just hashtag guacamole. You got to say like FFW guacamole or something like that.
You think there's going to be a lot? Well, they'll at one of us when they do it.
Okay.
At BTXJ or at Paul Charchian with a hashtag guacamole or FFW guacamole if you feel so inclined. And then we'll, if we get 18 people, let's do it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure
we
will.
Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. I don't know what division we're doing next week yet. It'll be the NFC, though. Wrapped the AFC. We'll talk through one of the NFC divisions.
The sun rises in the east.
I feel pretty good about that happening. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in a week. Bye-bye.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.